Welcome to Business Beyond Usual, a production of the Ross School of Business here at the University of Michigan. My name is Sheila Lal. I'm an MBA 1 and pretty excited to be on the show today. We'll be having a conversation with Nikayla Matthews, who is an amazing alum of the university. I'm just super excited to talk to her about her work in communications and entrepreneurship and what business school actually meant to her. She came through yesterday to be the guest finale speaker at the Last Story Lab of the 2017 school year. So, Nikayla, welcome.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I mean, it's really surreal to be here, to be on stage now after graduating from Ross. So much has happened.
Can you tell the listeners what you're, like a brief synopsis of what you've been up to?
So I'm a 2015 graduate from Ross, and since then I have gone on to do some interesting things. So when I initially left, I wasn't quite sure what I would be doing. I didn't have a job immediately after graduation. And so I moved back to D.C. and was interviewing while also starting to pursue my own passion projects. And that ultimately led me to start a blog, which evolved into a podcast called Side Hustle Pro. And now Side Hustle Pro has become my full-time business. The self-titled podcast, I interview bold Black women entrepreneurs who have scaled from side hustle to full-time profitable businesses. And I also, with the full company, now coach other podcasters as well as coach business owners to market and scale their businesses.
That sounds really fascinating. But before I ask all the questions about the business model and how you got to that point, your story yesterday highlighted what it's like to be a child of immigrants.
Yes.
And that intersection of like race, nationality, and gender in your own growth. And that's something I've been thinking a lot about, especially after finishing my MAP my last year. And I was wanting to talk more about what it was like to be in a space here where the conversations around imposter syndrome still feel kind of flat.
Right. I struggled with imposter syndrome for most of my life without knowing that it was called that, right? I didn't have a fancy name for this feeling. I just knew that I didn't want anyone else to think I wasn't as smart as them. And coming from a place where, you know, my parents moved us from Jamaica to the Bronx. So initially we were in a neighborhood that I loved. You know, I enjoyed, you know, being with my parents in this place where there were all these other people that looked like us. But then later on in life, I came to learn that we weren't getting the same level of education, and I was behind some of my peers, and it just fostered this imposter syndrome in me where I wanted to catch up without anyone knowing. So that followed me to undergrad and followed me even here to Michigan Ross. And yeah, I did feel that I was alone and I wasn't quite sure how to talk about it, but I luckily was able to tap into resources. So I opened my mouth and, you know, talked to the professors and, you know, eventually found the tutoring resources and study groups and things like that. And I remember my year, I was actually the liaison for the consortium. I was very adamant about us creating study groups because I knew what it was like to be an MBA 1 and not want to share that you actually got a really low grade on your quiz.
So for listeners who aren't familiar with the consortium, I'm in it currently, and you're an alum. So if we can just talk a little bit about what that organization is about, I think that'd be really helpful for anybody potentially interested.
The Consortium for Graduate School and Management is an organization, and its sole purpose is to increase the number of underrepresented students in top business school programs. So Ross is one of the consortium schools. Consortium schools are schools that are committed to this mission and also provide fellowships and on-roads to, or inroads, I should say, for people coming back into business school to be able to go through providing these fellowships. And even if you don't have fellowships, by being in the consortium, you have access to resources and just continued reminders of how you can give back and continue to pull other underrepresented minorities through this program.
Yeah, absolutely. And something that I do at Ross is talk about the intersections of other communities of color and trying to uplift everybody, because diversity for diversity's sake means nothing when we know that it actually increases the potential of an organization or increases your bottom line. And so thinking about diversity as a multifaceted experience is something that really matters to me, and it's something that I've been thinking about a lot at school. And when you spoke yesterday about that imposter syndrome, I didn't realize that I had been, not here necessarily, but that I had experienced it before, not because I didn't have a name to it, but because the way that we think about it is still very centered around one experience, right, and not the feeling of all these other like interplays, for lack of a better description. So you were working in communications for 7 years after you finished undergrad.
Yes.
Why did you decide to take the leap to business school? Like, why not a master's of communications or a master's in journalism, or why graduate school at all?
Exactly. Well, in that 7 years post undergrad, I had a lot of time to explore. I went through my ups, my downs, my mid-20s crisis, all of it. And I explored some different options. So I explored, I considered journalism school because I loved writing. And I ultimately just didn't see myself there. It just didn't feel right in my gut. And then I started to see that I had an interest in business, but I had always shied away from numbers. So that's the only thing that kept me on the fence for a long time. Was like, oh, this GMAT thing. How am I going to conquer it? But then I decided, you know what? I ultimately want to be able to have these conversations. While I worked in communications, I had transitioned from public relations to social media marketing. Mm-hmm. And with social media, it was, when I was doing it, it was a very new space, and we were constantly having to prove ourselves that this was a real job. Mm-hmm. And in order to prove ourselves, we needed to rely on numbers. And so I started to see that even in this creative career, I really needed to be able to speak the language of business and prove ROI and connect it all back to the bottom line. So I said, okay, I'm going to business school. And I eventually ended up finding a program called the Management Leadership for Tomorrow program, which also helps to kind of transition people like me to get ready to prepare and apply for business school. So MLT was a godsend.
Mm-hmm. So you come to Ross, and the first two quarters is just like core.
Yep.
And what was that like, again, after being in the workforce and coming from a qualitative background?
Yes.
How do you feel like you talk about like feeling insecure or like not as good, but how did you actually get over that? But like precisely.
Of course. Yes. When I came back, I was drowning that first fall. The core was tough for me, you know, and a lot of my peers had done business-related majors, or if not, they were engineers. There were people who were used to this kind of, they'd seen it before. Mm-hmm. I had never seen this stuff before because I shied away from it. So I was drowning, and I would go in the library and try to figure it out on my own. I would look at what, and just try to teach myself. And it was actually one of my fellow classmates who, I was in the library late on a Friday night, and they came and found me and kidnapped me. They told me, oh, we're just outside, let's just go, you know, we're going to give you a ride, because I lived in faraway Woodbury. And I was like, all right, fine, I'll take the ride. But then we ended up going to, you know, a lounge instead. And they were like, you've been studying so hard, like, you've got to, like, you know, have some fun. And that was kind of a wake-up call to me, like, okay, there's this whole experience that I'm missing out on, because I'm holed up in a library trying to figure things out on my own. So that's when I reached out to professors. Some professors, I'd reached out to one, and I won't name names, but he actually ended up making me feel bad. You know, he was like, why did you wait so long and all this other stuff? And so that just made me shrink a little bit more. You know, like, is this going to happen when I reach out to everyone? They're going to just blame me and make me feel terrible for not understanding. But, you know, luckily not all professors were like that, and I was able to be connected with tutors, and from there started to share more and more and you know, ask for help more and more. I can't say, it was ultimately that I just didn't want to fail, and I knew that I needed to reach out and open my mouth.
That is a really important thing to hear, even as I'm going into my second year, or anybody listening who, regardless of what phase of their life they're in, because not asking for help hurts you more than exposing your own vulnerability, even in the slightest. So you get through Ross.
Yes.
You're graduated. What goes through your mind when you're done? Like, what is your career path, what you thought you were going to do when you entered school?
When I entered Ross, as someone who came from a close to marketing background, I initially thought I would go into CPG. And so
what is CPG?
Consumer product good, brand marketing track. And while I was here, I'd explored a couple of companies. I'd done some summer brand camps and realized that although I love marketing, I really wasn't into the whole, that whole business track.
comes to business school realizes right, doesn't want to do business.
Right. You come to business school and you're like, all right, you know what it is? It's very, it's traditional and it's important. Mm-hmm. I do have a lot of respect for people who go through that because to me, it's like the business school of marketing, right? However, for me, I just had this inclination for social media. I still wanted to get back to that. And I knew that that path wouldn't quite put me there. However, I was non-traditional. There weren't any companies that came here looking for social media marketers, mm-hmm. digital marketers at all. So I knew I would have to kind of live off the beaten path. And for me, I thought, okay, well, if I intern at Google, that might put me closer because they're on the forefront of technology and what people are doing with digital and connecting mm-hmm. to consumers. That was my happy space, like connecting to consumers through online mm-hmm. mechanisms. So interned out at Google, didn't end up getting the offer. And when I graduated, I was feeling like, man, what next? Like, I'm in D.C. I wanted to be in D.C. because mm-hmm. that's where my boyfriend at the time, now husband, was. And it was even trickier because D.C. is so public policy focused. Yeah. I was like, how the heck am I going to find a really great marketing job here? But I just did some digging. I kept researching. But also at the same time, I was building out my own online platform just to kind of showcase my skills mm-hmm. and help people understand that I have this, like, creative mind that can still accomplish all of these tasks, and was just hoping that the universe would align, and it did.
Yeah,
it really did. So that's the number one thing I always want people to know, is that everything will work out. Like, when you are living in your purpose, it really mm-hmm. will. Yeah.
So you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast that you wrote your own blog, and that's really what you created your own avenue into the work that you're doing now.
Right.
But what were you writing about?
Right. When I initially started my blog, I was writing about marketing and technology because coming out of Google, I still had an interest in going into tech, and I was writing about what, you know, was the latest happening there. So it was kind of like my own mini tech crunch.
Mm.
And the more I did that, I was like, I really care more about people stories than mm-hmm. company stories. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to dissect Uber every time they do something. So I slowly was getting drawn to people's stories. So I started to interview people.
Yeah.
And at first it was interviewing people working in tech and understanding how they got there, especially, you know, people of color.
Yeah.
And around the same time, someone else actually started a blog, and I was like, I really don't want to compete on this whole people of color and tech thing. So
there's only like 10 of us, okay?
There's only like 10 of us. We're all going to have the same interviews. And then I realized, well, I really am more interested in these people and what they're doing on the side. And from there, I started interviewing people who had grown their businesses and started doing it with like a side hustle.
Yeah.
And so that's how Side Hustle Pro was born.
That's really fascinating because how do you discover what somebody's side hustle is? You know, like, how do you find that ecosystem? Because it's people who do it part-time.
Right.
So, like, what did that look like?
That looked like, it started with my personal network, and it actually started with a lot of rosters. The initial mm-hmm. people of color in tech started with a lot of rosters, and, you know, the Ross network is just awesome. And from there, I, again, tapped into personal network to people who I'd known from undergrad, and then I started reaching out to strangers. And I just, from reading articles or hearing them on other interviews, thought their story was just fascinating. Mm-hmm. And from there, it grew from, you know, it is kind of easy to figure out people who started on the side. You know, most people talk about that in their stories.
So I guess I think about this idea of side hustle. I had one when I was working full-time before, but when people bring it up as part of their story, it moves it from the side to the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
And do you feel like that's kind of the moment where it is their full-time job, like when they start talking about it more?
I think so. And that's actually what happened to me. You know, Side Hustle Pro, the podcast itself was my own side hustle. And then the more I talked about it, the more people associated it with me. And they didn't even know I had a full-time job. So I didn't mention, but at the time, I had gotten a full-time job by the December of the year after I graduated. So 2015, I'd started working for NPR as a senior marketing manager there, doing social media. So I loved it. But I also was completely engrossed in my passion project, and it started to become my full-time, my full hustle. Yeah.
So why podcasting as a medium to tell these stories?
Yes, podcasting is something I completely stumbled into. I didn't even listen to podcasts. People tried to put me onto Serial. I gave it a listen, and I was like, I don't know about this whole thing. But around that time, I heard about another podcast. Someone said, oh, this podcast, The Read, is hilarious. And I was like, okay, let me try one more time while I'm cooking, listening to this whole podcast stuff. And that kind of hooked me in, and I said, oh, let me see who else is on here. Started downloading more podcasts. And that was right around the time, maybe 3 months into me starting my blog, I said, oh, maybe one day I'll make it a podcast. But I didn't do it immediately because I thought, oh, that looks complicated. But then I started to realize these interviews that I was doing, it's really hard to bring an interview to life on paper. So I have so much respect for people now when I read these interviews and newspaper and, you know, like the New York Times and all of that. And I realized that my friends, I really didn't think they were reading the whole thing. I just got the sense that they were just like, yeah, girl, that's awesome. But no one was reading. So I thought, okay, maybe if I do a podcast, people will actually listen to these stories because they're important stories and I want them to listen. And then that's when I decided, okay, I'm definitely going to do a podcast. And I took a couple months to learn how to do it and finally launched.
So I'm going to put my business school hat on real quick. And what has been the return for the people you're interviewing? Have they seen a return on that time investment?
Oh, absolutely. Just, okay, so last week, just to give you one example, I interviewed a woman named Melissa Butler, who started a company called The Lip Bar. It's actually Detroit-based.
Oh, cool.
She's from Detroit and opened up in a retail store here and was recently put into Target. Now, my listeners...
She's boss. Because that's amazing. Yeah.
And my listeners, when they tagged me on Instagram, this woman tagged me in her whole IG story. She's like, I was listening to the podcast today and I just had to stop at Target. And then she's showing us and she's tagging me and the Lip Bar and showing that she just went in after listening to the podcast and bought this woman's line. And to me, that is, I can't put into words how that feels. So people definitely take action. For a lot of the people I interview, you can't ever take for granted that not everyone knows you. No matter how far you've reached, no matter how many Targets carry your line, there's still someone who hasn't heard of you. And so if they listen to this podcast, they are being exposed to these products, these lines, and it definitely has a return on investment. Guests email me all the time, and they're like, thank you so much. And I'm like, thank you. You know, like, you allow me to provide awesome content. So
That is mutually beneficial. Yeah. I'm just like in awe of how much impact you can have by going into a career that, like you say, you didn't want to do marketing, or like you came in doing thinking you're doing marketing, then you didn't want to do CPG, but like you're essentially doing that in your own way.
In my own way.
Yeah. Like,
the only reason I didn't want to do CPG is because I wanted to get back to social. And I know a lot of CPG companies, they actually hire agencies to do that. Oh, so I wanted to make sure that I continued to develop that skill.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I'm like really taking this in. It's really phenomenal to hear how we can each, we can lift up like another individual profoundly. And that's, I feel like that's the Ross difference.
Yes, it is. It really is. Can we talk about the Ross difference?
Yes, like, please.
The biggest thing that I love about Ross are the people. Like the people that I've met at Ross have made all the difference in the world. And I know it sounds cliche to some people because, again, it's one of those things that's really hard to quantify. You know, why is a network so important? Why are the people so important? But I talk about the roommates that I lived with here. Like, they're the, to this day, they're still like my foundation, my sister circle, my mastermind, everything. Yeah. It just so happened we didn't plan it that way, that we all had, well, they definitely had entrepreneurial interests. I didn't realize mine until after school, but was able to lean on them during some really tough times. In addition, now that, you know, we are out of school, we still keep in touch. My consortium class especially, you know, we check in on GroupMe, we have monthly calls. We are committed to supporting each other. And I just can't put into words how much that has helped me personally in life.
That is very reassuring, especially as, like, I'm going into my, like, the summer internships time.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, what what does that look like to continue to have that support network right. outside of being physically confined yeah. to one building?
I remember during my summer internship, I met up with one of my friends who was also interning out in the Bay mm-hmm. and, you know, talking through some of this imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. And he was just like, why do you guys do this? He was like, I was talking to someone else and they're, you know, having the same issues. And I'm like, I don't know. But, you know, he was trying to help me through these emotions. And, you know, that helped me to, like, go into work another day. Mm-hmm. And conquer things, but it was nice to have that ear while I was going through the process.
So one of my last set of questions is going to be around why, like, this idea that you didn't know you were entrepreneurial until later. And so what barriers do you think there are, especially maybe for women of color or people who don't come from an entrepreneurial background or like communities, to realizing that potential?
The barrier for, I can't speak for everyone, but I know the barrier for me was just, it's not something that's really presented as an option. With my upbringing, it was always expected that we would get a really traditional and responsible job, and we were here to get opportunities that our family members mm-hmm. in Jamaica maybe weren't mm-hmm. able to get. And to me, entrepreneurship was just presented in kind of a, well, it wasn't presented in my household, but later on in life, it felt kind of risky and irresponsible. Mm-hmm. It didn't feel like the responsible thing to do. Mm-hmm. And it's only now that I'm able to unpack and talk to these different people who are entrepreneurs that I see all the different sides of it. It was presented in two, like, one lane. Mm-hmm. You know, the dominant narrative is to, like, hey, you go to Silicon Valley, live off ramen, and live with a bunch of roommates. And not everyone can do that. You might have kids. Yeah. You know, might have parents to support. Yep. Like, there's so many different ways that you can become an entrepreneur, especially when you start on the side. So now that I know that, I'm like, oh, okay, like, entrepreneur, it doesn't mean one thing. And there's no reason why we should put it in a box like we try to put everything in a box. Like, and I really started it because I wanted people to have that in the back of their mind as an option. I wanted it to be an option just like everything else, consulting, marketing, anything, tech. I want entrepreneurship to be seen just as much as something that's attainable as long as you know all the things that go into it and all the steps you should take to have cash flow and have these things in place to protect yourself, to survive the ups and downs, but don't count yourself out like I was doing. Mm-hmm. So that's the real goal of it. And I hope that through listening, people will take a real, I hope that through listening, people will really consider having a side hustle while they're figuring it out. One thing that I remember from Ross, and I still hear from my friends, is for people who are not immediately jumping out into the startup world or entrepreneurship world, there's this idea that I'm just going to work for a few years and then I'll explore something. Like an idea is just going to fall on your lap one day. And let me tell you, it's not going to happen that way. You have to start exploring now. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean you have to start a whole business now, but just dabble. You know, that 1 hour that you have free or that 1 hour that you're flying from, you know, job site, you consultants who are so busy. Like, think a little bit about what you want to be doing and how could you tap into that now. It could mean just interviewing someone, right? Mm-hmm. It could mean anything, but do that now because an entrepreneurial idea is not just going to fall into your lap after 2 years.
That is awesome advice. Like, I've been, a couple of my friends have been talking about building out their own small businesses and not necessarily to scale, but to do something that, tests, like, it's action-based learning, but without the school part. So, like, really delving into an idea and using the skill sets that we are supposed to be acquiring and practicing them. Yeah. So that's phenomenal advice for any MBA student currently or anybody who's thinking about getting an MBA.
Exactly. Yeah. And if you want your hustle to be a podcast, I'm also a podcast coach. So you can feel free to reach out to me at hi@sidehustlepro.co.
Wow. Nice plug.
So welcome. And if you want to continue to connect with me, I'm at Side Hustle Pro everywhere, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and you can, you know, connect with me on LinkedIn as well. And then finally, if you'd like to be a part of the Side Hustle Pro community, just go to sidehustlepro.co/Facebook. We're the Side Hustle Pro community on Facebook and Side Hustle Pro again on Facebook. So it's very easy to find and connect with us and become a part of the community.
So what's the name again?
Side Hustle Pro. You can find us.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me about this. Like, this has been a really phenomenal, like, learning experience for me.
Thank you. It's been awesome to be here.
Thank you for listening and tuning in to Business Beyond Usual. If you like the show, please subscribe on iTunes and leave us a rating. It helps others find the podcast, and we love reading what you think of the show, good or bad. We'd love to hear from you via email as well. If you have an idea or just want to say hi, you can email us at bbupodcast@umich.edu. Again, bbupodcast@umich.edu. Business Beyond Usual is brought to you by the University of Michigan's Ross School of Business and is produced by Ramu Anamalai, Christopher Ankney, and for this episode, me, Sheila Lal. Until next time, I'm Sheila, and this is Business Beyond Usual.